Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here he is. Here's your host, JJ Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome into another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face-Off podcast. I'm, of course, your host, the one and only, the Capitals correspondent, JJ Regan. With me today, he's the Capitals insider. He's the Barney Rebel to my Fred Flintstone. He's Tark El-Bashir. Tark?
Barney had the nicer house and the better car and the hotter wife, so I don't know. But anyway, you know what? I want to have a little intervention here, JJ. Uh-oh. So I was in Brooklyn the other day for Caps Islanders, and I'm walking the concourse, and this group of young men, they look like young bankers. They're all in Capitals jerseys and Capitals hats and stuff, but they were, you know, very well-dressed. Hey, there's Tark. There's Tark. So I came over and talked to him for a minute. They were like, hey, man, we love the podcast with JJ, but can you tell him those lame intros are so played out? He's got to come up with a new shtick.
Really?
And we all had a good laugh.
Because
this is the truth.
We get a lot of emails where people are telling us that they love the intro.
Well, this one group of young Wall Streeters did not like the intro. So I didn't tell you this before because I wanted to save it for right now. So this is our little intervention.
If anyone has – all right, I am open to suggestions for how I should open the show. But the only requirement is that it has to insult Tarek in some way. Anyway, moving on, what we will talk about today, we're going to talk about John Carlson's season, we're going to talk about the Caps' new goalie rotation, and we will dive into the Brooks Orpik discussion just a little bit. Last week, it was Patrick Laine versus Alex Ovechkin. This week, it was John Carlson versus John Klingberg. Both players entered Tuesday's game, leading the NHL in points for defensemen, and both elevated their game in what was a fun duel to watch, and both tallied 2 points. Though Carlson scored the game-winning goal. So I'm going to go ahead and give the duel to him. His teammates and coach were effusive in their praise of Carlson after the game.
I think we look at John is definitely one of our leaders. He plays a lot of big minutes, and he's very good on both sides of the puck. So I think this year, with a couple of the young guys stepping in back there, I think he's been looked to, or we've looked to him, to step up and lead and put on a good performance. And I mean, the numbers don't lie. He's been having an unreal season, definitely in the point side of things, but maybe some parts that don't get talked about, the defensive side of things. He rarely loses the battle, so it's very encouraging. It gets the bench going when he plays like that.
He's always been steady. I think he's his role's expanded obviously a bit, which shows, you know, in time on ice and points and such. And you know, he's got you know, all the tools of a great defenseman. He's playing that way all year, and a huge part of why we've had success. And you know, he's finding that hitting the net and good things happen. And I mean, he's every zone of the ice, he's playing strong right now.
John's first and foremost, he's a talent, and obviously he's very motivated. He's in his last year of his contract. He'll be motivated. He's putting up points. I think, you know, he's gotten better and better. He's more poised than every year. And when he's intense and detailed in his game, he's a top defenseman in the league, and he shows it. For this year, he's played some high minutes for us and a lot of different situations. So. You know, it's just the growth of a good player.
Tarik Klingberg has been considered at least a Norris candidate because he has been leading defensemen in points for most of the season. Doesn't Carlson now have to be considered as well?
I mean, if the award is going to go to the highest scoring defenseman. Carlson has to be in the conversation, no doubt about it. It was great to see those two guys go head-to-head on the same sheet of ice. The one thing I really noticed was Carlson elevated his game. I know he told us before the contest that he wasn't, you know, concerned at all about going head to head with Klingberg, and individual, you know, numbers aren't what he's after.
And then he got called out by Barry Trotz.
You know, hockey players always say that because they think it's the right thing to say.
Right.
Even though I wish they would be a little more selfish and get and say something a little more interesting, right. But you know that's just the way they do it. It's a humble man sport, and so he said what he felt like he needed to say, but he definitely raised his game. But just watching the two of them back to back, the things that really jumped out to me was I think Carlson has a little more bite in his own end.
Yes,
I think Klingberg, however, he dances at the blue line in the offensive zone. He's got the puck. He reminds me of a upgraded version of Christian Juice.
Ooh,
like he finds ways to get pucks past guys. That's one of the biggest challenges for a D-man is now with the way teams play in their own end, how they have layers of players between the point shot and the goalie. I mean, you know, years ago, you might have a winger coming out to challenge you at the blue line if you're a D-man with the puck on your stick. Now you've got a D-man. Now you have a winger in front of you. You probably have a center, and you probably have a D-man before the goalie.
Right.
And you got to somehow get that shot all the way through. And for Pete's sake, you got to get it past the first guy, because if it goes off the winger shin pad, it's an odd man rush the other way. Or could be. It could be a shorthanded chance the other way if you're on the power play. But Klingberg did not struggle with that, man. He finds ways to change angles and change shooting lanes, and you know, get pucks under sticks and through legs. That's a special talent, and I think that's why he's able to get so many assists. You know, I don't see a whole lot of the Stars games, obviously, but I bet a lot of his assists have been rebounds that have been left. You know, loose change has been hanging out in front from one of his shots, and you know, a forward has crashed it and poked it in, because he has fewer goals by a lot.
Than Carlson.
Yes. I think he's got 8 and Carlson has 15. Is that right? Carlson, in my opinion, has a slightly better all-around game, but I really, really like the way Klingberg plays in the offensive end.
I was impressed by both of them. I thought the duel lived up to its billing, and it's pretty satisfying when these things get built up and then they live up to those expectations. So I was impressed by both of them. But, of course, we're here to talk about focus mainly on the Capitals and John Carlson. So, Tark, what does his big season mean for the Caps' chances of re-signing him?
It means he's going to be more expensive. It means he's going to be in higher demand. I think it means – I've always felt like the Capitals needed to re-sign John Carlson, and I hope this season he's having right now. And, yeah, look, anyone who's followed pro sports long enough knows that guys take their game to another level when they're in a contract year, especially when it's in a contract year, when it's that – real first huge contract you can get when you're in your late 20s. It's the one that can set you up for generations to come.
Mm-hmm.
So the next 5 generations of Carlsons don't have to work if they don't choose to. That might be too many generations. But anyway, people can be skeptical about performances in those years. You know, is that the exception or is that the new norm?
Right.
That's always hard to kind of figure out. But a lot was asked of Carlson this season, especially when Matt Niskanen went down with that injury early on this year. He was playing 28, 29, 30 minutes a night. A lot was asked of him and he delivered. And I have no problem giving him an 8-year contract at his age. You know, I hope they're able to come to an agreement that doesn't totally break the bank, but look, the salary cap ceiling's going up. Some contracts are going to burn off. And I think Carlson did what this team asked him to do, and he's homegrown. He's one of – you know, he's a player they drafted and developed. I hope they can find a way to make this a situation where he starts his career and finishes his career as a Washington Capital.
Right. The salary cap is expected to go up significantly. So if the Capitals want to get a deal done, I imagine they're going to be able to re-sign John Carlson. The one – issue that I have with that is let's look at the playoffs here. Let's say the Capitals lose in the first round. How much money are you willing to tie into a core of this team that when it comes to the playoffs hasn't achieved all that much? Carlson is going to take a big chunk of change. You have Kuznetsov signed. You have Orlov signed. You still have the Ovechkin contract. You still have Backstrom. All good players, and it's all good that they're here. But now you're going to take even more cap to keep hold of a core that is getting older and that hasn't won in the playoffs.
I can understand that rationale. You know, that said, are you going to be able to find a number one, 1B, 2D out there
for
less than what John Carlson costs?
Absolutely.
I mean, a player you don't know. You don't know his injury history. You don't know his makeup. You don't know how he's going to get along with a core that's not going to change. Let's be honest. It's not like this team gets bounced in the first round. They're still not blowing the team up.
Right.
You're still not trading Ovechkin and Backstrom. And you're not starting all over. You're just not. The question becomes, can you find better for less? And I don't think that's the case. And I don't think this team is in a position with Backstrom and Ovechkin and others getting older where you can say, okay, well, we're going to draft our next number one D and bring them along in a couple of years. Because in a couple of years, none of it's going to matter because number 8 and number 19 have moved on.
Right.
So I think Carlson has shown me a lot this year. I mean, look, is his game perfect? No. Does he turn the puck over too much? Yes. Does he have is the delta between his best games and his not so great games is it probably too big? Which is the way of saying is he can be inconsistent from game to game. Yes.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, he is a top-tier defenseman in this league. You know him. I don't feel like he's had playoff blunders or is the guy that you look at for not getting it done. When it comes to – I think the playoff failures for this franchise have been collective.
Right.
I'm not sure. I know Ovi shoulders the blame, as he always does. But really, which is you know, a false narrative. But I think you just find a way to get it done. You try to get it done for the best cap hit you can.
I think this was a done deal when Matt Niskanen went down and Carlson was asked to play almost 28 minutes a night, and he did it, and he did it well, and he really kept that D-core together. I mean, we're talking today about how defense is this team's weak point. And then now subtract Matt Niskanen, and John Carlson kept it all together by the way he played and by taking on all those minutes and shouldering the load. So I think this was that he proved then that is a deal that the Capitals have to get done. From the defense to the goalie, we are going to dive into the Caps goalie rotation right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. The hot topic of conversation in Washington these days is obviously the goalie tandem. Now the latest situation is that it seems we have a goalie rotation. Barry Trotz has said he is going to determine the starter on a game-by-game basis, and when asked if his philosophy was to have just one goalie in the playoffs, Trotz's response was, quote,
"Why don't you ask Mike Sullivan what he thinks?"
Of course, referring to Penguins coach Mike Sullivan, who has used both Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray in the past two seasons to win two Stanley Cups.
That has to do with injuries, however, not
yes, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but Trotz did reference Mike Sullivan. So, Tark, what do you think about the team going with a goalie rotation?
I think given the information we have right now, and we're recording this podcast after the Dallas game with 9 games to go, if you look at the way Braden Holtby has played since the calendar flipped to 2018, and you look at the way Philip Grubauer has played since the calendar flipped to 2018, you do have a choice. There is a conundrum. There is a difficult decision that's going to have to be made, and I would base it on what unfolds here, if you include the Dallas game, over what happens over the final 10 games. And I think that the rotation is the right way to go. You want to evaluate both goaltenders. Both goaltenders are pretty much on even footing. Holtby is, on his best nights, an elite goaltender. Grubauer is probably a slight notch below that on his best nights, but he's still world-class. He's still a very, very good goaltender.
Still but starting caliber.
He has starting potential. I would need to see it before I could say he's a bona fide number one for a playoff team.
That's fair.
I'd want to see that consistency and see how he physically holds up. You know, he doesn't have that prodigious size for a goaltender. I mean, hope he doesn't really either, but he's bigger than Grubauer. I would use these last games to, if I'm Trotz, to figure out who's going to give me my best chance. And the upside is whoever is your starter will be sharp and ready to go, and so will whoever is your backup in case the guy who gets the nod, let's say he fumbles those first couple of games or first the game. You know, it's not like you're going to a guy who hasn't played in 10 days.
Yeah.
You're going to a guy who just played 5 of the last 10 games. I have no problem with it.
And I think it's important to note for some people who think that Barry Trotz is just using coach speak and that he's not, that he actually knows who his starting goalie is already and he's just hiding it from the media. I think that was refuted by the fact that on Friday, Braden Holtby started and played well against the Islanders, won against the Islanders, and then Grubauer started Sunday's game against Philadelphia. Now, look at this in a vacuum, Braden Holtby is supposedly your number one goalie. He comes after a break. He plays well in a win, but he still doesn't start the next game. That shows you that this is a bona fide rotation, that we have a rotation going on here. So Barry Trotz means what he says when he says it's a rotation. But, Tarik, you can rotate in the regular season. That's fine. But don't you think that he has to pick one come playoff time?
Yes, absolutely. There will need to be a number one goaltender, a named, you are my guy until you're not my guy.
Right.
But you're going to start the playoffs, and this is how we're going to roll. I don't want to see a rotation once the second season begins. Like I said a moment ago, the upside to whoever he picks is if that guy fumbles, the other guy is relatively sharp and has played some meaningful games and some tough games in the not-too-distant past. So I'll be honest, I don't know which way he's going to go. I bet he has a gut feeling. I bet between in that coaching room, they've got a feeling of how they want this to turn out. But I don't know. I mean, you cannot argue that going into that Philadelphia game, Grubauer had the best numbers in the NHL since Thanksgiving.
Right.
Save percentage, goals against, quality start percentage. I mean, across the board, they were the best numbers. Yep. And this is an apples-to-apples comparison because he was playing behind the same forwards, behind the same D, for the same coach, on the same ice. I mean, it was not like you're not comparing, you know, Devin Dubnyk to Braden Holtby. I mean, you're comparing guys who play in the same freaking net. So it was a straight-up comparison, and Grubauer's numbers blew Holtby's numbers out of the water. So, and then you got the issue of what happened last year. I mean,
yep.
You know, let's be honest, Braden Holtby didn't have his best playoff. You got to wonder if that's also going to be an X factor when they're making this decision. You know, I thought Holtby was good against the Islanders. I thought he was good enough against Dallas. I think even when we asked Coach Trotz about his performance after the game, he said, I looked at a couple of those goals and kind of I want to look at them again, which means he didn't like a couple of them.
Yeah.
Holtby, I think, has kind of steadied himself with a couple of wins here.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think they're going to want to see more from him in these final nine games. And, you know, Grubauer had his first not so great night in a long time in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He was okay. I mean, a lot of that
he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't playing lights out like
that. That was not number one, 1A starting in the playoffs caliber goaltending that night. So I legitimately think that's to me, the biggest storyline in these final couple of weeks is going to be the performance of the goaltenders and who gets tapped on the shoulder for game one against Columbus. Yes, I already said it's going to be Columbus.
You think it's going to be Columbus?
Simply because I want the sweet potato fries at the Tip Top Kitchen over near Ohio State.
It's funny. Every journalist who travels with the team every year at this time, they all start cheering for the matchups that they want to see because of the travel that they want.
Actually, no. And since we're going down this rabbit hole, let's talk about it. I just think that the best pathway for the Capitals would be for the two Pennsylvania teams to face one another in round one
and just beat the crap out of one another
for seven games. And then the Capitals, look, I don't want to – Columbus is hot. I don't know if I want to see them really, but I'm not sure you're going to have a choice. Mm. Get Columbus, and hopefully you can dispatch them in five or six, and then you get a weakened Flyers or Pittsburgh team because Pittsburgh, I don't have to tell you why I don't want to – why the Caps don't want to see them –
huh?
Ever.
What?
But the Flyers have hammered them twice.
Yes.
In Philadelphia. They are a tough matchup for this club as well.
They are not playing well against the Flyers.
So ideally, you'd like to see those two Pennsylvania teams take a chunk out of one another.
I mean, but we thought that last year too with Pittsburgh, Columbus, and that didn't work out too well.
It did not work out well. But, you know, it just goes back to the playoffs. This is the most random of all tournaments.
It's random.
You know, I mean, take away the fact that it's a sport played on ice with a piece of rubber that bounces off things. With you know, sudden death overtimes and just the craziest of things can happen in a playoff hockey game. You need to have many things go your way. You got to be healthy. You got to get a referee call once in a while. You got to have the matchups. You got to have that bugaboo team get knocked out by someone else. You just have to have a whole lot go right to win a Stanley Cup. And so far, the Capitals haven't Haven't had that. Although I will tell you, man, if they had gotten past Game 7 last... Never mind. I don't know. Yeah, let's not relitigate last year.
No.
If they had gotten past Pittsburgh in Game 7...
Hey, we're going to go to commercial real quick before Target takes us down a rabbit hole that nobody wants to go on. Welcome back. Tark, let's wade into the Brooks Orpik debate.
Just for a minute.
Orpik was scratched from the team's game against the Philadelphia Flyers, and his absence was noticeable. Barry Trotz was asked about Orpik on Tuesday, and here is what he had to say about the veteran defenseman.
Brooks doesn't possess the skills of some of the guy like Christian Juice, and Juicer doesn't have his skills, but when you put them together, they seem to work. And there's two areas. On the ice with our, round the net, that bite that you need, especially teams that are go to your net hard, and probably more in the room. I mean, when our team needs a little tightening, it either comes from me or it's going to come from your leadership. And I really feel when Brooks wasn't in there, our room was way different. It was way different. So he is a big piece of the intangible stuff that you can't put numbers to. That help us go forward. So it was noticeable, no question. And that's why probably a staff and a team have a bigger value for Brooks Orpik than maybe fans or people that deal with numbers, because you can't really put numbers to that.
Tark, I don't think there's any player who gets as much flack as Orpik, but does Sunday's game in Philadelphia reflect that, regardless of the advanced analytics, he still has a positive impact on the ice?
I would say yes. I would say the net impact is positive. I mean, there are clearly things he cannot do at the same level he did at a younger age. But I think Barry Trotz hit a number of very important points. That room is different when he's not in there. I mean, he can be in there in his suit, but if he's not in there in his pads,
right?
You know, what it trots you to use the word tightening, so sometimes there's some tightening that needs to happen.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys who can do it. He can do it with a look. He can do it with words. He can do it with just something he says to a young player. I mean, there's all sorts. And those intangibles are just impossible to measure with Corsi and Fenwick and these other advanced analytics, which are great because I like to have all that information, because sometimes it can validate what you're seeing, or can give you a reason to maybe look at something a little differently. But you can't measure heart and leadership and these other intangibles with numbers. And being a deterrent to forwards coming in front of your net, there's no stat for that. I mean, is there a net front deterrent stat out there? I mean, Wayne Simmons spent all night 6 feet from Philip Grubauer. If number 44 is in the game, he's more like 11 feet back, right? Because 44 is going to drop him on his ass. And so those are the kind of things. Corsi doesn't measure that, at least not yet. We haven't gotten just a way to measure those intangibles. And I think he was sorely missed, especially against a net crashing big physical team like Philadelphia.
Yes, that's the important part there. People have heard about the intangibles. People have heard about the leadership. And for a lot of people, I don't think that's enough, because they view him – they say, okay, that can't possibly make up for the weaknesses he has on the ice. But what the Philadelphia game showed, that it's not just the intangibles. He actually benefits this team on the ice as well. It's not all about the locker room. He's not getting a place in the lineup just because of his impact in the locker room. He's also getting it because he does have an impact on the ice. Philadelphia dominated the net front of that game all game long. The Capitals could not push the Flyers out from in front of the net. Brooks Orpik absolutely helps with that. He is a physical presence that this team lacks when he's not there. And I bring this up, obviously Barry Trotz has had his reasons for dressing Orpik all season long, and for a lot of people, it hasn't been good enough. They want to see what this team is like without Orpik on the ice. You saw it there against Philly. Now, I agree, he's going to struggle to have a positive impact on this team when they play really fast teams like Pittsburgh. He just doesn't have the wheels for that anymore. But for physical matchups like we saw against Philadelphia, he absolutely has a positive impact on the ice as well as off of it. And I think that is something that the advanced analytics don't show. So for everyone tweeting at us, yelling at us, screaming at us about why Brooks Orpik continues to play, watch the Philadelphia game. He does have a positive impact on the ice.
And watch the Dallas game, too. He made two or three plays in front of the net that don't happen when he's not in the lineup.
And just to further clarify this, we don't have to justify Barry Trotz's decisions. If we thought it was dumb, we'd sit here and tell you it was dumb.
Absolutely.
I think what it showed me, and I wanted to see, I think Brooks Orpik has played too much this season. I think he would have benefited from having a few more days off. But what that Philadelphia game showed to me is that his impact is not just in the locker room. He does still have an impact on the ice. Now let's just hope they don't play the Pittsburgh Penguins, because that's a tough matchup.
I'm thinking it's Columbus or Philly, but I don't want to see Philly in the first round either.
Philly would be tough. It could be Philly, it could be Columbus, it could be Florida, and it could be New Jersey, all which would be tough matchups.
New Jersey concerns me the least among that group.
It does me too. They may be the best of those four, but New Jersey seems to struggle against the Capitals. Mm-hmm. They struggle against the physical game that the Capitals bring. Pittsburgh establishes their quick game, and the Capitals have to end up in a track meet with the Penguins. The Capitals established their game against the Devils. The Devils are a quick team, but they end up playing a more physical game against the Capitals, and that usually does not work out well for the Devils. So Devils would be, if I had to pick of those four, I'd pick either Florida or the Devils probably. It would be my pick.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have your question read and answered on the next podcast, the Mailbag Pod, you can send in and do capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. We get lots of questions every week. Sometimes we don't get to all of them, but do not worry. If you send us a question, we will get to it at some point. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available, and be sure to give us a good rating and review. Those things really do matter to help spread the word about the show. I don't just say it because I like the sound of my voice. I'm not Tarek. Tarek's silent shaking of his head, it always works well in the podcast.
That's all you're getting out of me on that one, man.
Thank you, as always, for tuning in. For Tarek El-Bashir, this is JJ Regan. Now let's get the puck out of here.
See ya.